What a beautiful thing that we can spend time together here. And certainly it's a real honor for me and May to be here to witnessing all this collective consciousness and in a peaceful surrounding. And I'm really, really humble and it's to be here. Okay, just before I start, I just want to touch upon about the children's story I was reading a little bit earlier by Marin. Before, it's about the dot painting by the little girl. It kind of just wanted to bring to the light that one of the most famous contemporary artists in the world right now, his name is Damien Hirst, I'm sorry, and he also does dot painting, just white background with dot painting, and each one costs about $250,000. So there you go, you never know, right? So keep the dreams on. Okay, so my name's Lam. I'm an artist, and also I study Eastern philosophy since I was teenagers. It's mainly because I went through tremendous suffering, and I was close to death, and I really have to figure out what life is all about. That kind of draw me into all this. I'm really, really happy that the Beacon asked me to do this talk about imperfection. It gave me about 30 days, whole month, which is allowing me to contemplate on the subject so I can bring you this report and share with all of you. And thank you for that. Yeah. Because my background, I'm mainly speaking about the subject from the angles of tea, which is what I love and what I practice, art, and also Eastern philosophy, especially Taoism and Zen or Buddhism. And why do I choose the title, The Importance of Imperfection? And the reason is it's because what we're hoping to do is collectively, if we can get into the subjects, and hopefully we can realize imperfection is actually the perfection, and from perfection, there's no perfection in the first place. So I'll go through there a little bit later. Okay, so when I was contemplating on the subject, like I was thinking about Buddha. Buddha spent all his life teaching, and over 50 years of teaching, and there was about legend say about 80,000 books recorded about the sutra, all his teaching, and apparently there's a big team of translator undergoing to do all the translation for all the sutra, and apparently it's going to take about 10 years to do that. And so I was given, I guess, 15 minutes today. Okay, so this talk is going to be. Originally, it will be over the time, but we're going to skip and then simplify some of this, and hopefully we can make it all fit. Okay, so we'll start by Rionji. Rionji is a Buddhist temple. It's built in about 14th century in Kyoto, which my family had the fortune to visit. That is actually exactly the same photo which I took in 2004. That's when we visited there, and has a profound influence on me since that experience. I can't really talk about the experience, but this piece of landscaping, the rock garden in Rionji, it signifies the masterpiece of a Japanese aesthetic called Wabi Sabi. And in the garden, it looks perfect. There's no speck of dry leaves in there. And then in the meantime, on the three walls, old ancient walls, the clay walls around it, it shows a lot of aging and a lot of imperfection. And it's the combination of the perfection and imperfection, I believe, personally for me, to bring out that profound feelings. And can't really express very, very well. But Then it's later on I realized when I was doing the research on wabi-sabi, one of the reasons that aesthetic is actually an expression of the essence of existence, including these three things: impermanence, incomplete, and imperfect. And those three ideas are ingrained all throughout the wabi-sabi aesthetic, and is very, very much the strong spirits of the Zen Buddhism. And we'll go for that a little bit more later. Just gonna watch my timing here, okay. Okay, so, since we're on the Japan and I'm practicing tea, I just want to tell you a couple of little stories about this one of the famous tea master in history. His name is Sanno Rikkyu from Japan. He was about 400 years old last year. So, and there's many, many historical things about why he's so famous, and this is actually a movie about him. And what's made a few years ago, and this tells a good story, especially about the love and relationship. Anyway, there's two story reminds me of Rikkyu's about imperfection. One of them, it's this one day he's receiving a guest to his tea house, and he asks his son to clean up the garden, sweep the garden, to make sure it's nice for the guest. So his son's clean up the best he can, and then he come back to ask him to get his approval. And Rikkyu looked at it and said, no, do it again. And then he'd come back, his son just make sure it's immaculate, everything is tidy up, like not a dust on the garden in the pathway before the tea house. He come back and asked Rikkyu. Rikkyu said, no, that's not perfect. And he's scratching his eyes, go back and try his best, do it again. And this time he's getting a bit impatient when he come back to ask his father. And Rikkyu again said, And he go out to the garden, and he take a bunch of leaves and also flower petal, and scatter on the pathway. And he tell his son, so now that's perfect. Okay, so that's one story. Second story, it's when Rikkyu is becoming a tea master himself. His teacher asked to see him in his teacher's newly renovated tea house. And it's beautifully done. It's brand new. Everything it looks really good. And then he was sitting down with Rikkyu and asked his opinion. And he said, "It looks really beautiful, but something is missing, right?" And Rikkyu looked at it, bowed to his master, and he slowly moved to the alcove, which is housing the flower arrangement and the calligraphy. So he looked at the vase that holds the flower, and in the vase there's a two little ear handle in there. And then he took the vase and he cut off one of the ear, break it right there. And then he turned around, looked at his master. And his master just with his approval, that's it, that's what is missing. Okay. So since then Rikkyu, he has been designing tea house and designing tea ware in a symmetrical sense of design. So this was supposed about the garden I was telling you about, but that's the tea house. Okay, so now even if you look at the tea house in the middle of the wooden bin, it's kind of crooked, and that's also signifying the imperfection. However, the Japanese tea ceremony, if you have a chance to experience, it's very, very serious. And then every gesture is had to follow a strict protocols, and they had to perform it in a very, very perfect way. Even the sound of walking across the tatami or sound of the breathing, it's all part of the ceremony. So, however, Rikkyu designed all the tea ware into the asymmetric sort of style, so nothing is mirroring exactly on the other side. And the reason of that is upon observing of the nature, and nature itself tell us it's never really, really quite perfect. Every flower has its own shape, that kind of. Okay, so that it's kind of significant I want to bring up. So now, when we look at the imperfection, what is really imperfection? It's basically a lack, some kind of flaws in our life. particular, you know, expectation of what the condition is. And it's also, it's kind of a form of this satisfaction with you know, our current situation. And if you look at it, it's, I have this little drawing here. It's basically me. The me is actually in the head. If you look at it, it's completely an intellectual thing. And we'll go back to that concept a little bit later. And also reality is what's going on in the well in the same time. And there's a gap between what we're thinking in our mind and what is going on in the well. And these don't match. And it's our little head saying, I'm not going to take this. I refuse to accept this. And that is what is the lack. And that's what this satisfaction about reality is like. And it's sort of a losing touch of reality and an oversight of what is going on. And in a sense, it started from there, from this misunderstanding of the reality. It becomes some. It can become something really, really stronger, and it can even form a kind of psychological disease. And I will explain it, you know, from steps to that, like what kind of result, if severe, this will get it to. First, there'll be a mental struggles. So when you don't accept the reality, there'll start be frustration and mental struggles, and then further on, it becomes stress, anxiety. And also distress, and if it's stronger, it becomes anger. And then anger always needs something to blame, and then it becomes blame. And blame is one of the most toxic energy in the body. And then when it gets really, really strong, it becomes depression, and someone can even lose, go out and shoot someone, you know, that becomes hurt. So it's a step-by-step scale of the downward spiral if we don't manage this well enough. Okay. And from the point of view of Buddhism, Buddha has already pointed out in the Four Noble Truths, all of this is because is desire, is our attachment to what we want. And what we want is not the reality it's giving us. Okay. Now, when you translate the want, there's a common want in a human everyday life. And I think there's only a few things, mostly, that we're concerned about. For instance, number one is health. It's like, my head is hurting, my back is hurting. But it's not supposed to happen. It's not perfect. It's not supposed to hurt. You know, we should have a perfect body, right? Exactly, yeah, there you go. So remember, it's my back. Okay, there's my back in there. And secondly, after the health, it's probably finance. Most people are worried about their finance. You know, I don't have enough money. I need more money. I am supposed to be rich, right? Okay, and then romance relationship, you know. I just can't find my love. Nobody loves me, right? That's me in there, okay? And career, you know, my job sucks. I don't like my job, I don't like my boss. I couldn't find a job, you know? And then relationship-wise, in terms of families and friends, such as my sister just hates me. You know, I'm perfect, but my sister hates me. That's why I have no friends, you know, that kind of thing. I really need more friends. So it's all embedded in the desire of wanting something that we don't have, okay? And this kind of dissatisfaction, a sense of imperfection in life, really is a cause of suffering. And suffering is always my favorite subject. Actually, I can't go on about suffering for months. How does suffering come about? We already talked about. In terms of my understanding, and also from what I study about Buddhism and Taoism as well, there's two types of suffering. Okay, one is you're losing something that you love. So when the desirable things that you lost depart from you, and you have that clinging, you don't want to let go, that it's the first form of suffering. And the second form of suffering is when something you don't like, you hate, keep coming to you. Like your sister, you know, right? So those are two really, really basic form of suffering. But what is the cause behind that, behind the suffering, behind the wants and attachment and clinging and resistance? It's and if you can, if you look into suffering, like next time when something come about, you know you suffer. If you look deep into it, try to feel it. Slowly, slowly, layers by layer, you can see much more clearly. Then at the very end of the cause, it's fear and insecurity. So it's the fear that draw us. Don't want to let go of something that we love. And also this fear that when something that we don't want keep coming back to us, then you create that kind of frustration and stress. Okay, so I just want you to keep in mind, it's about that. But in Buddhism, Buddha also talks a lot about how those experiences come about, and in terms of life experience. And we generally, like when Buddha taught, he generally care about life and suffering and finding the solutions for that. So when you go into deep meditation, he started try to analyze what human life and experience is all about. So, and those are the Chinese character, and it basically it's the six senses from our six senses organ. First one is eye, and then ear, mouth, nose, the tongue, the body, which is signified the touch sense, and the last one it's more like perception, intuitions. So it's the sixth sense. Okay. And in this, from a Chinese Buddhist point of view, we call it six dust. Okay, so when we in contact with the sense organ with the outside world, that created an experience. Okay, so here's what I want you guys to consider. We've been talking about imperfection. Can we just give it a few seconds? Think about in the life situation, what is perfections? Yeah, so let's consider as perfection, and if you find something, please raise your hand and let me know. Okay, I'll just wait a few seconds here. Yeah, please. Oh, very beautiful. It's almost like a haiku poem, isn't it? Okay, anybody else?
A mathematical concept like a circle.
Okay. Okay. I think that probably only exists in your brain. Also, your brain doesn't exist. That's part of perfection. Okay, so those are two very, very good example of that. And so we talk about experience, how we get in contact with the outside world and become experienced. And after the sensation, which is very much the roots of contact. What we bring up to is perception. So how we analyze those information, and that's what those two angles coming from. One is from the scientific angle, and one is from the more spiritual and artistic angle. But all of that is all generated from the mind. And I actually bought a book of Dhammapada, which is a collection of Buddhist teaching. It's right by the tea table there. A lot of them talk about morals. And when I studied Buddhism, I wasn't really interested about morals as much. But the first, very first teaching of the Dhammapada, it means when Buddha talked about experience, he said all experience is preceded by the mind and made by the mind. So that kind of summarizes all teachings of Buddhism for me, actually. So,
say it again.
All experience are preceded by the mind and made by the mind. Okay, so your mind is make up the reality, and that's what perception is all about. Perception is it's kind of like a belief system. It's when you encounter with experience, you try to analyze and understand it, and you form some sort of a belief system. In the most basic form is like if you use Facebook, I like that, I don't like that. That is the most basic form of, you know, categorize. When you have new experience and you try to categorize, and what it is in abandoned memory, and every time you see the same thing again, you bring out the drawers from your brain, and then you say, okay, well, I like that even more. So every time you see the same thing again, you like it more. And that's how you enforce. And at the end, it becomes an attachment. And furthermore, it becomes fear of letting go of that thing. And then furthermore, it becomes suffering. So that is kind of a progression step for them. So it's the judgmental bias. We call that a judgmental bias, basically, with that experience. And it's purely a mental construct. And from the Taoist point of view, from Lao Tzu's point of view, he even traces it back, it's when we have the intellect, when we name something, that is already beginning of the process. Yeah, is it okay so far? Okay, great. All right, so how does perception work? And remember the problem of the half-full, half-empty water glass? Okay, I was contemplating on this problem for 30 years, believe it or not. It's a very, very long time. Because I wasn't satisfied for whatever with my contemplation and what I was searching for. And after 30 years, finally, dawned on me one day, and I find the answers. Okay. Do you guys want to know the answer? Is it half full or half empty, right? So, is it both? Okay. Is it both, yeah? Okay. Exactly. I thought about that for a long time, but I wasn't happy with that answer. So I had to get deeper. So the voice comes to me about the answer is that glass of water doesn't really care what I think. After 30 years, I finally figured it out. Okay. And you see, that's exactly what's going on here. It's a mind game, it's a mental construct game, and what we see with what we demand from the well and how we categorize the well, all our life problem, all trace back to here. Okay. So the mind. Okay. How the mind work? That Chinese character actually means heart. Okay. In the Chinese language, especially in all the Buddhist texts, we call the mind heart. Okay. And I was pondering, why is that? You know, literally, it means heart. And it's because from our culture, we always focus much more on intuitions rather than intellect. And so we see the mind is actually coming from here. When you're feeling the mind, it's all from here, it's not here. This is the obstruction. This is the barrier. This is the noise. This is what's cloud everything up. This is the thought pattern, the memory, the judgmental bias, the egos, the mind, my job, my girlfriends, my family, all that stuff's not working out. It's all from here. So from Taoist and Buddhist point of view, they started tracing back and they started full meditation and observation and understanding, they start to realize the mind center is actually from here, which is beyond our reasoning. But somehow, this mind just know the truth. This clouds it up. Okay. See what else I got here. So when we talk about the concept of imperfection, right? The idea of something, it always have the idea of the opposite. That's the duality concept of Taoism or Buddhism. And it's when you talk about imperfection, you cannot talk about perfection because imperfection is defined by perfection. It cannot stand alone by itself as a concept, right? It's like black and white. If everything's black, there's no black because you cannot define black and it needs a contrast and the opposite. So actually, if we bring back to the Rionji, the rock garden, why is this so profound about perfection and imperfection together? It's because the both idea is on the two sides of the same coin. And what is the coin? The coin is the mind. Okay. So first we have to know this duality concept when we want to express something, an idea. And then after that we realize they both are the same thing. Imperfection, perfection are the same coin. Yeah? And with the understanding, what's happening? Well, what's happening is this bring back to, some of this idea of the wabi-sabi. It's a idea, a mental idea, just like everything else in the world, is subject to time. Okay, one thing, impermanence. Impermanence is very, very important concept. And I'm sure you probably contemplate on that a lot already. This is the only things going on in the world, actually going on. It's change. Now, when I'm talking about time, I'm not talking about the psychological time, the calendar's time, about from our memory, think the past, future, and or 2016, 2015, or this month, last month. Because you can't really chop up times into segments, can we? And after all, time is just a concept. It's not even real. It's a concept to help us to communicate. So we know what we're talking about. We know what time we need to meet. But in the actuality, what time really means is change. It's aging. And this change is ongoing. It's a constant. And it never stops. Okay. And again, from Buddhist point of view, this is what's called suffering. It's anything that, however perfect, sitting by the riverbed and looking at the rock and flowers, or that that mathematical theory, it's all subject to time. One day it could be proved wrong, from perfect to imperfect, and then that river one day is going to dry out. So everything in a way is imperfect and impermanent, right? And it's never complete. And that's because of time. Time is a very, very essential part of everything. And it's eternal. All we have is this eternal now. And that's all. And there's a story I want to tell you. It's one of my favorite stories. When Buddha was teaching in a setting one day, and he asked a question to thousands of monks, right? And he asked, what do you think, how long is a life last? And then the monk was thinking about it. Some of the monks raised their hand, said, 60 years? And Buddha said, no. 80 years? And then the monk said, Buddha said, no. And then one said, 100 years? And Buddha said, no. And the other one said, maybe 50 years? And Buddha said, no. Right. And he said, a life only lasts within my single breath, one single breath. Okay. This moment only. And this is very significant, and I love that story because I think when he say life only lasts one single breath, it means when you aware of you, where you're actually breathing, you are with the well. You never separate. Okay. So so that's very important. Time is very important. It means things and situations are always unstable, incomplete, and imperfect. Okay. All right. So a lot of this concept here, I might have to skip quite a bit because of the timing. A lot of this concept here is actually really just answering the question of suffering. Okay. All right. So next one, I'll just skip it for really quickly here. Self. We need another day to talk about this. So one of the most complex idea in Buddhism is no self. It's the idea of no self. But I'll just quickly cover that because we're going to be running out of time right now. Those five characters means the first character means form, so the physical form. So those is together. The Buddha called five aggregate. When he looks deep into the self himself, he come up with this five aggregate, what is forming everything sentient exist. So first is the form, and second is the feelings, the strong feelings, the emotions. No, feelings. And the second, it's all the perception of thought pattern, what's going on. And the fourth character, this one, it's a little bit hard to translate. It actually means, kind of in Chinese, means activity or movement. But in a way, from the Buddhist text, it talks about it's actually mental formation. So all the cognitive formation in the brain. Okay. And the last one, it's more like a consciousness. So it has a function of I'm knowing, I'm thinking, I'm feeling. So that the knowing. So those five things, except the first, which is talking about the material world, all the four others is in the mental realm. Okay. So I was contemplating a lot about this a few years ago, and I was even at a few more dimensions. One is I call it intuition, which I talked a bit earlier. And also I would add another one is interactions. And because self is never, never separate from everything else. Okay, and that come back to the no self idea. And the last thing I'll add to that aggregate is memory. For some reason Buddha doesn't talk much about memory. And I think memory is very much integral of everything. It's like a control center of everything that we do. Everything we understand, everything we ever know about. So understanding how memory works, very, very important. Okay, and one of the idea also about self is from Buddhist point of view is this idea called dependent or originations. And when I first heard about the concept, my whole body was just shocked. Like dependent origination, what does that mean? Even just two words, that's really beautiful to me already. And what it means is everything come to being in the world. It exists based on other things. So we come into the world because all the other things, all the millions conditions put us together. And because we never really separate. And maybe that's a definition of love. I don't know. I don't know. But what it means, everything coexists together. Okay, I'm going to quickly jump. 5 minutes? No more. Okay. Okay, well, we'll leave it like that. How's that? Can we just, one more point? Okay. Okay, skip me. Death, we're not talking about nature. Okay, that's good thought, eh? Freedom from what? Okay. Okay, I want to talk about beauty a little bit. Well, let's skip that beauty. Okay, let's skip that as well. Yeah, okay, keep going, yeah. Acceptance, that takes another day, okay. Awareness takes another day. Okay, this is what I want to talk about, contentment. Okay, if you go next slide here, in the Rionji, on the entrance with the temple, they have these stone water basins. It's designed by someone. And it's got four characters, kanji. the character itself doesn't mean anything at all. But what's interesting is they use this water basin to purify the mouth and the hands before they enter to the temple. And the square in the Chinese character means mouth. So when mouth put together and those four characters all of a sudden make sense. And what it means is contentment, only I know. So that's what it means. So contentment is really the freedom and salvation for imperfection. Okay. So I just arrived, this is me and Adrian when my son was 9 years old. He's 20 years old now. So they're contemplating about life and travel plan in the garden. Okay, so wait. Okay, next one. So I'm only going to leave you two quotes here from my contemplation, from my report, and this is the first one. Okay. The only imperfection in life is complaint. Okay, and the second one is, life is neither perfect nor imperfect. Life is a constant balance of fear and contentment, tension and relaxation. That's all. Thank you so much. So please come for tea.